If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to Above the Fray podcast. I'm Carol Gold. The number here is 914-803-4522. And I'm also here with my co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Steve, I know that we did the promo for tonight's show and we indicated we were going to talk about those two articles that we posted links to, but I'd like to take a few minutes before we get there, and if it takes up half the show, that's okay too. I want to talk about something that got called to my attention today and that I think is very, very important, critically important. You know, you and I both know that in the last couple of days there was an incident in Irving, Texas, about Islamic, there's a reason why I started to say that, by a Muslim young boy who came into school with what appeared to be a clock in a metal container, somewhat like a metal briefcase with wires connected to the clock. And he brought it to school. He showed it around a couple of his teachers. One of his teachers told him not to carry it around. The reason being, it looks like what any bomb would look like if somebody were doing a suitcase bomb attack. And ultimately, one of his teachers called, I forget whether she called 911 or she called the principal, whatever happened. He wound up, the police came to school. He was questioned, and the end result of this story is that now there is a huge cry about Islamophobia in Irvine. And there was previously a problem because there's a large Muslim population in that city. Let me just give a little background here. And several months ago, you may remember that they tried to set up a Sharia court in that town to operate independent of the U.S. judicial system. And the mayor of that town, who was a woman, fought that vehemently, and in a close but nonetheless successful vote from the board, they wound up not allowing the Sharia court. So the reason that I say it's important to know that is because on its face, this story looks like what the president would say, the police acted stupidly or the police acted prematurely. But I heard facts today that are very disturbing that have to do with the truth of this story. I listened to the mayor and I listened to a security expert from one of the largest private security companies in the world. And here's the other side of that story that's not been reported. Number one, the young man was not cooperative with police when they questioned him, which is what led to his booking and led to his, which led to his fingerprinting and his booking. Number two, his father is a former Sudanese, not former, they still have Sudanese citizenship. His father has run for president in the Sudan twice. His father is intimately connected to the mosque in outside of Dallas. That was the instigation for the Sharia court that they were trying to set up. His sister now alleges that she was discriminated against as a Muslim several years ago and that she was suspended from school because of it. In addition, it now turns out that the reason you're only hearing one side of the story is because the child is a minor, and as such, the record can't be released. The police record can't be released. So the police and the mayor and the school board asked the family if they would allow the other side of the story, if they would allow the record of the incident to be released, and they refuse. The family also set up a meeting, well, the mayor set up a meeting with the family on Tuesday. The family canceled. The meeting was moved till Wednesday at 11 in the morning. The family canceled and rescheduled it for in the afternoon. In the afternoon at 1:30, when the meeting was supposed to take place, the family was a no-show, and at that very moment, they were on their front lawn giving a press conference. The other facts that are relevant is the young man was infinitely more detailed and cooperative in the press conference than he had been with the police when they questioned him. In addition, his sister appeared to be feeding him answers. And finally, he's a very intelligent, very bright kid who, yes, loves science, but he keeps calling it his invention. Number one, he didn't invent anything. It's a Radio Shack clock that he put into a metal box and brought it into school. Now, number one, I don't know a school district in this country, given what all of the anti-gun people scream about, that would have allowed something that could look like a suitcase bomb to be walked around school all day. And if there had been anything resembling an incident, even if no one had been hurt, they would not have sued that school district and raised holy heck about the negligence of the staff and the administration in exposing children to risk. However, because it was a Muslim, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to act rationally. You're not allowed to act prudently. And one of the most disturbing facts I heard from the mayor. She said that when President Obama tweeted from the White House, think about this. This is from the mayor of Irving, the city in which it happened. And by the way, she got up at 6 a.m. and started waking up people on the school board, waking up teachers and calling the police department to get more detail because she woke up to the story. The most disturbing thing I heard was the mayor say that when President Obama tweeted, "Nice clock, Ahmed, want to come show it at the White House," the description of what he had not yet been leaked to the press. So, Steve, you and I both live in Texas, and I just read a book called It Is About Islam, which lays it out incredibly as to what the philosophy is, what the principle is, what the tenets are, and what the plan is by radical Islamists. They have a global plan. They have implemented most of the stages of that plan. That plan calls for the year 2020 as a total takeover of the West. And they're a year ahead of their schedule on all the other stages of that plan. This is what they term, actually I don't remember the term, but it's basically culturalization, Islam by culturalization. So they are submitting us. They are causing us to submit through silence. They're not even going to need a violent takeover in this country. We're going to fold, and it's incredibly disturbing to me because everyone's becoming afraid to say anything that in any way seems like it might be antagonistic to Muslims. In addition, CARE, which is a Muslim Brotherhood organization, the Council on American Muslim CARE, C-A-R-E, I forget what the E stands for. It's C-A-I-R, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is a Muslim Brotherhood front organization, were right there on the lawn with this kid when he had the press conference. We're being shepherded, Steve, and it's beginning to be very disturbing to me. I know we didn't talk about doing this on air tonight, and let's give it 5 minutes or so more because I do want to give our listeners what we promoted the show about, but I sure would like to hear your thoughts.
I just want to understand something that you just said. Are you saying that before the announcement came out about materials he had, President Obama had said something about it? So are you implying that this was done as a front? This was done as kind of a coordinated media event by this organization? Or can you explain a little bit more about that action there? Because I don't quite understand your point there.
My point is exactly what you just said. I'm not saying that the police, I'm not saying that the president had foreknowledge, but I'm saying it was orchestrated. The kid was used by either his father or his family or whoever. The kid was used. He brought in something that no kid would bring into school now, knowing what the environment is in schools. This thing was all a setup to make the police look bad, to make it look more like Islamophobic in Texas. And this is a test run. I'm not saying it's a test run for a bomb. I do think it's a test run for seeing how you can shut down opposition, shut down the voice of truth, shut down the facts from reaching the press. He's a minor, so they can't release the record without the family's agreement. It's all too neat and clean for me. The fact that the president was able to tweet "nice clock, Ahmed," before he should have known it was a clock, I'm not going to go so far as to be conspiratorial that the president was involved, but I do think the powers that be that were involved got the story to the White House as soon as it happened, because they wanted that additional aspect of the story out there, and they knew the president would react, as he always does, not on the side of the American or the Christian, but on the police, but on the side of the perpetrator or the black or the Muslim.
Yeah, I think the issue is I think the more crucial issue is that there's a method to the madness of silencing speech. Just like you said, Pamela Geller talks about this at length, that there is a form of speech that is not allowed. And so, for example, when there's always a preface, or there's always an added on comment when you talk about Muslims, that most of them are peaceful, which I agree with, but that it's not the majority. It's not the majority. But by always putting that qualifier, you begin to limit the effects of free speech and debating those thoughts and those points. And I think you bring up an interesting point here. Is that this has a similar ring and tone to it? What do I mean by that? Well, from what it sounds like, it almost seems like They did a test run with a child, and it's almost to test the limits of intolerance of A, because it's Texas, and B, look at these Hicks in Texas that they will limit a smart Muslim boy from bringing in this clock to school, and look at how people in Texas overreact to these communities. So it has, from the get-go, to me, it has a look and smell of a way to attempt to silence the speech within communities. Now, I think it's more interesting that it happens in Texas because, as you know, to the extent it sends a great message to not only to other school districts in the state, to other media outlets in the state, is be careful of how you report things, because we're going to come out guns blazing against you guys. So I think, from a marketing standpoint or tactical standpoint, they did something quite brilliant. But I think what you've laid out here eloquently is that there's a lot of flaws in the story, and let's hope that the press continues to press on the story and get the story out accurately for what it appears to be, like a test run, an attempt to silence speech here in Texas.
What I actually hope they do, which they won't, I'll bet you, I hope that family sues. Because as an attorney, I can tell you that the way to get the truth out is in the process of discovery. Once you file a lawsuit, everything's open to discovery, and neither side gets to hide anything. I'll bet they're too smart to sue, although wouldn't that normally be the reaction, right? I bet they're too smart to sue because that's not what this was about. This isn't they don't want a lawsuit to prove he was unjustly harassed or unjustly targeted. That's the last thing they want. They want what they've got now. They've got a win now. They've only got one side of the story out. They're not cooperating in releasing. In fact, they're prohibiting the release of the other side of the story. The media isn't doing its job and digging deep. It's taking the story at face value. And the president is, you know, went out there as he always does. You know, my son could look like Trayvon. The police acted stupidly in Boston. The police are harassing in Ferguson. He did what he always does because he doesn't need facts, this president. This president just needs his biases and his opinion, his pen, as he likes to say, you know, and his ability to issue edicts, whether they are factually based or not. So I find it really disturbing, and I'm most disturbed by the cleverness of it. You know, I'm a Jew who all too readily remembers Nazi Germany, as every Jew does. And you are absolutely right, Steve. The silencing of speech is the first thing that happens, that and taking of the guns. Now, with the Muslims, with the Islamists, rather, with the radical Islamists, they're not going to seek to take the guns. Because they can be much more effective if they undermine the culture, and I really believe that that's what they're doing. I also believe that's part of the mass migration into Europe. It is a deliberate attempt to undermine Western culture. They may have concluded early on they were never going to win a physical war, at least not in the early years, because they had to go up against some of the greatest countries in the world that were armed way beyond their own capacity. But if they could wage a cultural war, which I believe is what they're doing, and like with a Pamela Geller, or like with the Charlie Hebdo in France, or like who's the Arabic author whose life has forever been
Salman Rushdie.
Thank you. Salman Rushdie, or even Zudi Jasser in this country, a moderate Muslim, a God-fearing Muslim who's not about a violence or spreading a caliphate or creating a caliphate or spreading Islam. Their lives are constantly in jeopardy because they're trying to speak the truth, and they're trying to, in Zudi Jasser's case, trying to be a moderate voice, and Pamela Geller's instance, trying to tell the truth. In Salman Rushdie's just trying to be a novelist and write a novel and be somewhat critical of a religion that doesn't permit criticism. It doesn't permit analysis. It doesn't permit any of that. And so it's spreading here. You're not allowed to question Islam. You're not allowed to have an opinion about the intentions of someone if they're a Muslim, because you must be an Islamophobe if that's the case. This is becoming very dangerous. And I just couldn't, Steve, I couldn't let the show go without, you know, I hope our listeners and even, you know, those archive listeners who get to us later in the week, I hope they walk away from this with at least their own questions and maybe an increased and an enhanced radar about what's going on, because I bet you there's another story coming, maybe another city or maybe a follow-up here in Texas. That was a test run. I have no doubt in my mind. That kid didn't have a science assignment. He didn't have a project to do. And he didn't invent anything. He brought a clock from Radio Shack in a metal box from Walmart, were his own words, to school. Why? Why? It defies logic. And the fact that they're not cooperating, but they are cooperating with CARE and the media on their side of the story, tells me we're under assault culturally. Steve.
Yeah, Carol, I just wanted to add one more thing to this story. As you know, Carol, I'm a big fan of science fiction. And, you know, one of the most interesting things that I find about science fiction is a lot of the stuff what they call it is a lot of it is predictive science, predictive future. And so what they do is they add a lot of elements to a story that tends to predict the future. And you know, people theorize that a lot of times by introducing stories to the culture, a lot of times those things become reality. For example, you know, I'll give you the case of September 11th. There was numerous stories prior to September 11th. Mainly by Nelson DeMille, but there was other writers as well. There's been shows. There was a show on The Simpsons that also introduced the element of the Twin Towers being attacked, being knocked down, being taken down by towers. It wasn't a novel concept. And so the point that I want to address here is that you're right. These stories that come out become, like you said, like test runs. They begin to test and probe the limits of our culture and the limits of what we can take. And at the same time, they're kind of probes into the defense and how you collapse the defense of the culture. So I think these repeating stories are always something that we as individuals need to pay attention to and be alert of, because they're just not stories on the face of it. They're stories that have deeper meanings. And unfortunately, the media never really looks at them at length or in depth of what the markers or what the cultural implications are going to be. But I think you're spot on here. This was, having heard you, I think it was a bit of a test run, and I think we all need to be more aware of future things coming our way. Do we lose you, Carol?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My mic went on silent for a moment. What I was saying was, you're absolutely right. They're poking. They were poking the beast, so to speak, in their minds, us, the United States. They're poking to see how much they can get away with, and I fear they'll get away with a lot, because, number one, we've become so compliant around things that are wrong, that we know are wrong, and also because our attention span is 5 minutes long, and the media knows that, and they move on to the next story. I assure you, if that kid had showed up at a Hillary Clinton rally with that box, he would have been spread-eagled on the ground in 60 seconds by the Secret Service. And he had come to the White House gate with that box. But suddenly in Irvin, Texas, the school board is the baddies, the police are the baddies, the mayor, everybody's the baddie, because they did what you would want them to do to protect the other children if this was some fluke of an incident that was going to create damage. So there it is. We're down to 7 minutes. Let's try to give 7 good minutes, Steve, to our military, and we can always carry this on to our next show on Thursday. The two stories were one about a particular battalion, I believe, that has had an extraordinary amount of suicides. Our veterans coming back from Afghanistan, they had a particularly nasty assignment in an area where their supplies were often not forthcoming, where their backup wasn't forthcoming. They were often surrounded on all sides. They lost members of their unit to improvised explosive devices, and they witnessed horrible maiming and deaths of their colleagues and comrades. And so they're killing themselves one at a time now that they're back here. The article was just heartbreaking, but also about the ineptitude of the VA. And the other article is about our soldiers are being ordered in Afghanistan to ignore sexual abuse by military that we're training. Sexual abuse of young boys, because it's the norm over there, having these young boys who are sex slaves, and our soldiers who have tried to intervene are either being court-martialed or dismissed dishonorably or sanctioned or whatever. Steve, you are an ex-Marine. Probably you can't. I don't even believe there is such a thing. I think once a Marine, always a Marine. But I guess technically we call you a former Marine who was formerly active and now no longer is. Steve,
that's correct. That's a proper term.
Just give me some. You take the 5-6 minutes. Tell me about these stories.
Well, I'll just address the other one, the one on the Afghanistan story. I still have many friends in the Marine Corps, and many friends that have served in Afghanistan. And when I read the story this morning about the sexual assault on young boys, it was confirmed to me by a friend. I had heard about this, and I knew about this for about a year and a half, 2 years already, that this is a well-known practice by Muslim leaders, where they will actually have young children that are their, whatever you want to call them, sex slaves. I mean, poverty is is immense. There's young abandoned children everywhere. They're easy to pick up. People sell their children. So it's a common, you know, it's a common practice. From what my, you know, my contacts have told me was that you know, it was obviously, since there's a separation of the sexes, it's not seen as being okay to have a young sexual girl around all these men, but clearly it's okay to have a young boy around them, because what they claim is that it's a son of one of the other Muslim men, and that he's tailing along or something along those lines. There's always a means to justify it. But what he says is what they do with these young boys is, many times, like you said, is they're in the offices. Their appearance is changed, so they look more feminine. And what they are is they're assaulted regularly by many of the men in the clan. It doesn't surprise me that it gets silenced. I mean, what my sources were telling me is that there are many of these men sometimes could be allies within the U.S. or that they use as sources. And they use the sources, and they talk to them. And so from a higher up level, they're seen as sources within the government. What surprised me in the article was that you're not the Marines and the Army units were not allowed to save these children or do anything about it, which I find appalling. But having been in the military, unfortunately, what most people think in a war is just a bunch of gunslingers fighting around. Unfortunately, the reality is differently. Is that there's orders that come up from top that say you can do this and you can do that. So my instincts and my take on this is that the Marines on the ground and the Army personnel always know what the right thing to do. And if you go to the junior officer level, the captains, lieutenants, the majors, they always tend to do the right thing. What tends to get distorted is, many times as a general far away, and he hears his reports and says, listen, we've got to stop this and don't report it on it because it's affecting our ability to fight these wars. So I think the people on the ground are being fired for doing the right thing, as well as and if that's the cost of doing business, that's they're trying to make a point and trying to do the right thing. So I understand it.
I am appalled. And look, I've never been to war. I've said before, I've got a daughter currently in uniform in the Israeli Defense Forces. I myself have never been in the military. I've never been to war, obviously, and I am perhaps not qualified to comment from that in that regard. But I am personally appalled that we would know, allow, be within range of, and not intervene. Now, I realize this is a huge cultural difference, which is the longer story that we don't have time for tonight, and goes to the other story as well, I guess, which is when you're dealing with culture, maybe you have to reevaluate how much military success do you think you can have in the part of a world where they see the world so literally differently, and they have believed for generations so differently that, and what they value, you don't value, and vice versa. What's the point of fighting a war there if in the end all you're going to do is, you're going to swap one leader for another, and both of them are culturally anathema, and they're enigmas to anybody in the West because of what they believe and how they live their lives. We're out of time. This is definitely a two-show story. We're going to continue talking about our veterans, about why we're in the kind of war we're in over there, and maybe even segue into who some of the presidential candidates on the Republican side and the Democrat, and to how they see our position vis-a-vis the Middle East. So thanks for listening. We're going to pick this up again on Thursday night. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And you've been listening to Above the Fray podcast. Have a great week, everybody, and Lashana Tova to my Jewish listeners. Thank you.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.